Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 333 of the podcast. It's Saturday, 5th of August, 2017, as I record this. So today I'm talking with Ashley Gardner about some of the latest developments with Wattpad, which are all pretty exciting. So listen up for that coming soon. And in publishing this week, well, Amazon KDP released the KENPC version 3, which is the way they calculate the pages read in the Kindle Unlimited books and how they pay authors based on those pages read. So it's one of those updates that everyone goes nuts about. but I don't think, I mean, obviously, you know, the updates are usually a good thing because Amazon's trying to stop the scammers. But when you use the sledgehammer approach, some authors get caught up in the changes. So I have seen that, for example, the mega box set, huge box sets, anything that goes over 3,000 pages is going to be won't get any further page reads. And some people were talking about the way PageFlip works and how that might change the reading and whether it's going to fix that sort of loophole. So I'm not going to give you any prescriptive advice on what to do, but I think the lesson with the changes and the impact that it's have on some authors. So some authors have seen page reads go up, some have seen them go down, some have stayed the same. And I think the lesson has to be that if you don't control your situation, you know, if you don't control the way that you get income, then, you know, you're relying on one company and your income can change and it's out of your control. And I think one of the most important things about being an indie is, you know, to be independent means actually being able to protect yourselves against this sort of up and down environment. So if you are a full-time author and you are all in with KDP Select, or you have just one publisher, then make sure you're putting aside money for difficult times. And it's good to hear now that a lot of indie authors are starting to invest in other things and starting to look at streams of income outside of publishing in order to sort of protect their future. And I think it's super important. If you're not a full-time author, then of course you have other streams of income from your day job, then of course, you know, go all in with KDP Select if you want. There's certainly no issue there. But I think if you want a long-term career, then obviously you'll be writing more books, and then you can put some of your books wide and some of your books in Select, which is what I do. And the key to a sustainable income is multiple streams of income, and through multiple books, multiple retailers, multiple countries, and all the rest. So interesting times. And of course, that is KENPC version 3. Do not expect that to be the last one. I mean, you know, until they stop the program, if they stop the program at any point, you've got to think that this will happen every at least year, I would think. There will be updates that sort of protect the loopholes, and that's good for all of us. So there we go. That was one of the big pieces of news this week. The other thing which I find interesting and have a look at every year, this might not be your thing, but Forbes announced the world's highest paid authors, or the so-called Forbes richest author list, which is something I always have a look at. Now, this year, very interesting, J.K. Rowling has edged out James Patterson from the top spot with her $312 million to his $87 million. So good on Joanne there. With other authors also in the top 10, Jeff Kinney, who does The Wimpy Kid, Dan Brown, Stephen King, John Grisham, Nora Roberts, Paula Hawkins, who was Girl on the Train, E.L. James, Danielle Steele, and Rick Riordan also on the list. So some lessons from the Forbes Richest Author list, which I think are
you know, really interesting. First of all, going multimedia, because of course, the reason J.K. Rowling is, and also going beyond the thing that made you all the money in the first place, because the reason that she's knocked Patterson off is because she's not just resting on Harry Potter, you know, not just resting on Harry Potter books. She has a lot of products. Obviously, Pottermore is her own company, her own website. So she owns that form of community and retail. She's put out a play and has a play, and that's come out in book form, which is really interesting. She has a theme park and films. I mean, obviously we can't emulate things on such a big scale, but we can emulate the creation aspect. For example, Fantastic Beasts was only a little mention in Harry Potter, and yet it has spawned a whole new storyline. And I thought that the film was very good, and actually think I liked it better than the Harry Potter. And there are more films to come in that series. So that's a classic case of taking an existing story and picking something out in it that was a little mentioned and turning that into a whole new series of books and products. And of course, a play being a different version of a product or a book that has then been put into a physical form. Interestingly, I have been thinking about radio plays. I'm going to be talking to some people about that. You know, we had Adam Gaines on talking about plays. I know quite a few authors who write plays, and I think they're fascinating forms of writing. So, you know, and sometimes writing a screenplay, you know, is for TV or film is kind of huge, but a stage play or a radio play can be something that is perhaps less ambitious. So very interesting. The other lessons learned from the Forbes Richest Author list, keep writing. the mainstays of the Forbes Richest Author list, people like James Patterson, Stephen King, Nora Roberts, Danielle Steele. These are authors who put out a lot of books. James Patterson does a book a month, mainly co-writing, and Nora Roberts does a book a month on her own because she's a machine. She reportedly writes a book every 30 days. Now, that's not something I'm doing, but, you know, I certainly, you know, having talked to a few authors recently about their income, and, you know, when they say, oh, I'm just not making enough money, or I didn't get any money last year from books, I'm like, well, how many books did you write? And they said, well, I had one, or I had none. My last book came out the year before. And I'm like, well, this is not a market where you can, if you want to make good money, you can't just put one book out a year. That's the truth. If you're doing it for other reasons, then of course you can take as long as you like. So that's interesting. Also, that on the richest author list, these are all fiction writers. So people crave story and escape, especially in difficult and turbulent times, which I think is also why Netflix and Amazon Prime are raking it in, and so many great stories being made into shows. And adaptation is also an interesting angle. I just finished watching The Handmaid's Tale, a fantastic adaptation of Margaret Atwood's book. I studied that back when I did English A-level, which is sort of the 16 to 18 year old exams if you're in America or anywhere else and you're not in Britain. But, you know, I remember studying it then and finding it very disturbing. I think that the film we watched then can't possibly been as good as this adaptation, but it was excellent. And I'm also interested in the adaptation because I have on my desk a printout of the adaptation, a pilot for Desecration. So hopefully we will be doing something with that, but I'm very excited about reading that. And then we'll need to think about who we pitch it to. So early days, and of course most screenplays never go anywhere, but you know, it's interesting to think about turning our ideas into other ways of telling stories, not just on a page, an e-reader page or a printed page. So yeah, when we look at those, the richest authors, they're also all, apart from some outliers like Paula Hawkins, they've mostly been doing this for years and have a lot of books. So very interesting. So the bottom line is people want story and escape. But also, on the other hand, I advised a fiction author this week who's struggling with fiction income to consider diversifying into also writing some non-fiction. Firstly, non-fiction can be much faster to write and dare I say easier to write. It's very different. It's hard to explain, but it's very different. So I said, you know, I think if you're struggling with just fiction and you can consider some nonfiction ideas as well, I personally find that it is a palate cleanser to write nonfiction. It's more of almost a steady income. The money can be lower, but it can be more steady. So it's good to diversify there. Nonfiction also sells well in print. And this week, Ingram announced a rollout of their iPage in the UK. Now, it's available in the US and helps independent bookstores order independent books. And this now means that indie publishers and authors have the opportunity to achieve better visibility in bookstores across the UK. And I think the most important thing here is there is virtually no distinction between physical books stored in a warehouse and those that are print on demand, with a live stock count being shown for both. So this means, and apparently, you know, it used to be that if you went onto software and you found an indie book and it would be shown somehow as print on demand, and the bookseller might just decide not to buy it because there's no stock. But now they're showing a stock count because there's no difference. I mean, the amount of time it takes to get a physical book from a warehouse, it can actually be printed. So I think this is fascinating. And for more on getting your indie books into bookstores, check out How to Get Your Self-Published Book into Bookstores, a new book that's out from Debbie Young and the Alliance of Independent Authors. So check that out. In my personal update this week, I am still wrangling the MacBook. I'm at 57,000 words, which is quite good because it's broken the back of it. I'll probably stop the draft at around 70,000 words. So I'm almost there. But I've had a real up and down week creatively, definitely the roller coaster of a creative life. Still, you know, feeling like it's a pile of rubbish some days, and then other days just loving it, thinking it's the best idea ever. And, you know, that one day I got over 5,000 words with dictation, and then the next day I completely fell apart. So, you know, this is the up and down of the creative process. But essentially, you know, I'm plodding away, I think, sort of getting, and I know how the rest of the book is going to work, but it's so full of plot holes because it's fantasy. I'm kind of making it up as I go along. And I've said it again, respect to the fantasy writers, because, you know, to keep all this stuff consistent really is a challenge. And, you know, I've been like, oh, then this happens. Oh, but earlier that happened. So how can that happen? You know, so it's very interesting. But what I decided this week is stop worrying about the holes in the world building in this first draft, and I'll fix it later. And also, I struggle with getting bogged down with deep and meaningful theme. Because I need the book to mean something more than just the top level story. It has to mean something about topics I care about and or find interesting in some way. And this the map book, I'm kind of oscillating now on whether it's going to be a series or just a standalone. But this is about borders, and borders continue to be in the news in all kinds of ways. And I'm thinking about borders a lot. And so in the end, I was just like, stop it. Stop trying to write deep and meaningful nonfiction about borders and tell the damn story so that people can enjoy the story. And then if they like, they'll understand the border stuff underneath. So if you are getting bogged down with theme or over the top types of things, just get that first draft down, get like what happens down, and then you can add in the seasoning of theme later. And that's actually what Stephen King says in On Writing. It's one of his things. He often doesn't know what the book means until after he's finished. I think Stephen Pressfield said this as well. I mean, I've started the other way. I know what I wanted the book to mean, and I'm trying to bake the meaning into the story, whereas Stephen King says, write the book, write the story, and then figure out what it means, and then go back and add in some seasoning around to make it have more depth around your theme. So I think that's quite interesting. I've also this week used KDP Print, so on the KDP dashboard, to do a paperback version of Successful Self-Publishing, which is permanently free ebook on all platforms, and I update it quite a lot. So I didn't want to do a print version because I update it, and I was like, oh, and I love paying my print formatter and print designer to do this stuff, but I didn't want to do a print version because of how often I update it. So I decided to use Vellum and managed to do a print book with Vellum, and also then put it on KDP Print, and it is now available. So to those people who wrote to me and said they wanted it in print, it is now there, and I'll see how that goes. And I haven't even seen it myself. It literally just went up this morning, and I've ordered it, so it should be here tomorrow. But I'm hoping the quality is just as good as it would have been if I'd have paid someone else to do it. But it's the first time technically I haven't formatted it myself, because Vellum does the work for you and kind of, you know, does all the things that you need to do. So really interesting to see how that will turn out. I'm also working on The Healthy Writer, which I mentioned last week. I am co-writing with a medical doctor, because obviously it's not something I could write myself. Now, I've had the usual issues that computer people and writers have. So back pain, RSI, migraines, headaches, weight gain from, or the writer's butt, as it's called, from sedentary work, and also just general aches, pains, feeling unfit. And I've personally spent the last three to four years trying to get healthier, and walking a lot more and going to yoga, and I'm standing up right now, and cutting out sugar and all these things. So it's really fascinating to sort of revisit some of the issues I've had. So I actually found a poem that I wrote a number of years ago about the experience of having a migraine, and I read it and I was like, wow, I can't remember that I was in that much pain. But that type of stuff is going to go into the book. It's going to be an honest book, and there is a questionnaire that I would love your help and your, what are the things you're concerned about? What should we definitely include in The Healthy Writer? And also anecdotes or quotes that we can use in the book. You might have heard about it already on the email list or Facebook. If not, please go to thecreativepen.com/health, H-E-A-L-T-H. So thecreativepen.com/health, and fill in the questionnaire before 14th of August 2017, and you'll be in the draw to win a signed copy of The Successful Author Mindset. But of course, you can fill it in after August 14th if you're listening to this later. I'd still really appreciate your thoughts. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Just a few of them. Matthew Callahan says, great show with Dean Wesley Smith. Listened while walking over the Burnside Bridge here in Portland and wandering the city as I brainstormed. Fantastic. A.L. Michael, listening to the show on my lunch break at the park, wandering around the cathedral. Sent a lovely sunny cathedral picture, which is beautiful. Oh, Andrew Einsbruck said, I'm evidence of your strategy at work. Went from podcast listener to audiobook buyer, how to market a book edition 3. Fantastic. Thank you, Andrew, and everyone who has fell for my evil marketing plan, where you will listen to the podcast and then miraculously go and buy my audiobooks. But that is awesome. L. Lohuis, I've totally massacred that. Sorry, L. Binge listening, the podcast, best way to spend a rainy day. And on that binge listening, I've had a couple of emails from people wanting more backlist in the feed on their podcatcher. So I've actually changed the settings on the feed. So there should be a lot more episodes on the feed going back a couple more years. So hopefully that helps you if you are listening to some of the backlist podcasts. And finally, Vera Brooke says, loved the thoughts on balancing contentment and ambition. And I'm still getting emails about the Thrillerfest show. So thanks, everybody, for your support there. And it's always good to know that you're not alone in your creative roller coaster. Right, today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will share a word from our sponsor in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Samantha Charlton, Rana Fawaz, Steve Coombs, and thanks to April Kung for upping her pledge. And I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. We may make it to 500 episodes. So on Patreon, you can support me with just a couple of dollars or a few more dollars if you want to throw in an extra coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will be recording for August this coming week, probably, or the next week, but please add your questions on the form so that I can answer them soon. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview.
Hello, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Author Relations at Kobo. A lot of authors often ask me, what are our merchandisers looking for? What kind of books are featured on Kobo, and how can I get my books featured on Kobo? Well, this is information that can actually help not just with Kobo, but with some of the other places that are more interested in doing human-based merchandising. So Kobo, Nook, and iBooks are probably more in line with doing this type of promo. And what they're really looking for is professionalism, looking for a fantastic cover that speaks to your target audience. Clean metadata is critical. Putting the right information in the right fields, like title, subtitle, particularly volume number, if you're writing books in a series, that helps us help get those in front of the right customers, and a decent price point, which means doing global pricing, ending your prices in most English language territories with a .99 price, or in European or in pounds at 0.49 or .99, and actually thinking about different pricing in different countries. For example, in India, you have to price bargain basement low to get any attention. In the UK, the publishers are very competitive, so you got to keep your prices low there. But in places like Canada or Australia, New Zealand, the tolerance for a slightly higher price is okay, and you can actually walk your price up just a little bit more without hurting your bottom line sales while still giving your readers a good value. You can find more tips like this at KoboWritingLife.com, where you can also click on and publish directly to Kobo through the Kobo Writing Life portal. But let's get back to your host, Joanna Penn, with the Creative Penn Podcast.
Today, I'm here with Ashley Gardner. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Joanna.
Thanks for coming on the show. And it's been ages, but just a little introduction. Ashley is the head of partnerships at Wattpad.com, the world's largest platform for discovering, reading, and sharing stories. Now, Ashley, what's so crazy is you were on the show in 2014. I can't believe how many years it's been.
No.
And we've seen each other at like conventions, and like we've seen each other for years at various conventions, haven't we? Back in the days when Kobo had really good parties. Remember that one?
Yes, they were always great.
And then they stopped the budget for that, but hey, whatever. But anyway, back in 2014, you were talking about Wattpad, but a lot has changed since 2014. So just first of all, give us a sense of how big the platform is now, how much it's grown, the country demographics, which I think are interesting, and how your role has changed.
Absolutely. So at Wattpad, over 55 million people come to Wattpad every month to use it. And using Wattpad, I think a lot of people tend to think of us as a writing site. You know, we talked about this a bit last time. It's absolutely one of the biggest behaviors on site, but more people are coming to read. So I think that's a really powerful way for writers to engage in this audience, people that are just coming to look for new stories to read. People are spending over 15 billion minutes reading every month. So, you know, it's a huge audience. And there's been over 375 million uploads around the world. So you asked specifically about some of our demographics. The US remains our largest market. It's definitely very big. I think last time we spoke, I would have said the Philippines was number two. That's probably still the case, but Mexico's number three and growing at such a fast rate that I wouldn't be surprised if Spanish is our most popular language by the end of the year because it is growing and getting so much traction.
Wow, that's so interesting. A couple of things off the back of that. Like, there's this thing out there, people aren't reading anymore. Reading is dying. Young people aren't reading. So, you know, obviously that's not what you're seeing, or is it comparative, like by country, or what are the demographics of the readers, I guess?
Yeah, well, the readers are definitely young people. Our audience is primarily millennials. I would say about 85 to 90% of our users are under the age of 30, depending on which country we're looking at. But it's absolutely a very young audience. And I think that makes sense because our product is so mobile and so social. It is a social network. And, you know, most of our traffic, about 90%, is coming primarily through our mobile app. So that type of audience that likes to consume, read on their phone, text message their friends, it's very appealing to that demographic. And, you know, you mentioned the people thinking that kids don't read. And I feel so strongly in the opposite direction. Even when you look at how many words a day teenagers today are writing between their Twitter posts and blog posts and Medium and text messages, there's never been a more literate generation of being able to translate their thoughts and their feelings into words. And to see what they're able to do on sites like Wattpad is so impressive.
Yeah, and I'm just going to parrot back some of the stereotypes that people are bringing up. I was at a literary festival, and this woman said, you know, she was an older lady, probably over 70, but she basically said, you know, the language of the young people is going to the dogs. You know, people can't type. When people do text messaging, they can't type properly. They use these emojis and all of this. So I guess the question there is, when people are using Wattpad, is the exact grammatical and spelling accuracy important, or is it more about story? And is the language changing?
It's a mix of both. Like, with 55 million users, expectations are very different for different users and what they're engaging with, for sure. I think, though, that a lot of our audience understands that what's being written and presented to them is being written by their peers on their phones. I think there's a lot more forgiveness. Often they're not looking at something and saying, oh, this is sloppy, this was bad. It's like, oh my God, I love that character, this is so great. You see a lot more enthusiasm than that type of criticism. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that it's very hard for a lot of people to put something that they wrote out there into the world. And to be able to write in a safe space like that, where they are receiving these enthusiastic comments and feedback in return, I think that makes a lot more people confident in their voice and allows them to continue writing. For so many stories on Wattpad that I see that are popular, you know, you'll read the first few chapters and it can be difficult sometimes. There are great stories on Wattpad, but for so many people who've joined, this is the first thing they've ever written ever out there. And when you look at the difference between the first chapters and the last chapters, it's like, wow, they've really found themselves. They're a lot more confident. They're a lot more skilled. Like, writing, like anything, just takes practice. And the more that people are being encouraged to do that, I think the better they'll be.
Mm. And I mean, I'm a real fan of NaNoWriMo. And I think the same thing would be true there. Like, if you posted your first draft of what you wrote in NaNoWriMo, it would probably be similar. Like, by the end of the month, you're actually a better writer. So do you see that the people who are posting there, because it is mainly first draft writing, you know, are they then going on to that second book and kind of doing better? Are they publishing? Like, what is the process for a writer using Wattpad?
Yeah, I think for most of our users, their goal isn't to publish or to edit. Their goal is the same way that, you know, people will use a site like Instagram or other social media. They're, you know, in the same way that they're posting stories, they're doing it for likes and for feedback and to connect with friends and to get those comments and to have that connection with other people. In the same way that, you know, someone who posts photos on Instagram might have a huge following, that doesn't mean they want to be a professional photographer. So there is absolutely differences between our community. But for people that are receiving a huge following, it's making them question, you know, what do I want to do this for a living? Do I want to make this a book? And for those users, I think there are more and more opportunities to help them and to do that. We're seeing We've seen since we last spoke in 2014, there's been 3 New York Times bestsellers that have come off of Wattpad. There's been hundreds of Wattpad stories published. And when we look at things country to country, in some markets, we're seeing, you know, 7 to 10 of the bestseller list at any time are coming from Wattpad. So it's absolutely starting to change where people look for talent as well.
Mm. And I think your point about Instagram is interesting because Wattpad is not a publishing platform, is it? It's a social network, as you said. So if people are in KDP Select, can they post on Wattpad?
I can't speak to KDP's, you know, their terms and conditions ever changing as Amazon is as well to what that might be. I can say that we have many people that are in KDP or that are published authors through traditional publishers, all, you know, posting works on Wattpad. Sometimes they differentiate it by, as you said, this is a first draft that I'm posting. And when I finish it and self-publish it, it becomes a new work that is on KDP. Or some authors just use different things. There might be certain books in KDP that they don't put up on Wattpad and other ones they do. It's, you know, completely the choice of the author, and we don't make any conditions on what they can and can't do.
Mm, okay, cool. And so what types of stories, like what genres are doing well? You know, again, people might be thinking, oh, it's just teen fanfic about One Direction.
Yeah, there is lots of teen fanfic about One Direction, but there is also a lot of really fantastic thrillers lately. I've seen a lot of really great ones. Horror is something that's doing really well on the platform. I received a report from someone the other day that a lot more like Japanese manga and stories like that are being written. I think that there's a tendency to look at Wattpad and just look at what's most popular and say, well, this is clearly an audience that likes teen fiction. My story would never work there. But if you look at what most bookstores sell, it's not necessarily, you know, it's perhaps a lot of teen fiction, a lot of the bestseller list. And that doesn't mean that there aren't other stories being bought there or flourishing in the bookstores when you just look at what's most popular. And I would say the same is true of Wattpad. There are, you know, 375 million stories on Wattpad. There are 15 billion minutes read. So look at a few million minutes and how people are choosing to spend that time in, say, historical fiction. You know, there are huge flourishing communities. They're not the biggest ones on Wattpad, but there's still a place for all types of stories.
Mm, that's great. And do you find that there's any kind of relationship between what emerges through Wattpad and then what ends up kind of being a trend in the ebook store? So for example, lit RPG, which is a emerged genre which didn't exist like a couple of years ago, I guess. Did you see that coming on Wattpad first?
Sorry, can you repeat the trend that you said you saw?
Lit RPG. So it's like L-I-T RPG. Maybe you haven't heard of it.
No, that's super interesting. I would love to kind of dive in more.
Let me just explain it because it might be that. It's basically people who are inside games. So it's mainly written by gamers about characters who are inside games.
We absolutely have lots of those. Yes, we have lots of Minecraft stories and other stories about video games. And again, that's another thing that when we look at some of the Japanese terms. There was one otome that I may be pronouncing wrong. Again, that's one that came up in this new report that some of our creator relations people who look at a lot of the data were sharing with us. And I think it's so interesting to see how people do engage with these trends and how you can see their rise over time. And we absolutely see a lot of trends that we see start on Wattpad really grow and start to affect what's available in other ebook stores as well. I think one area where we really over-index is in a lot of minority fiction. And I know that's something that we mentioned last time as well. It continues to be an area Wattpad does very well in things like looking at stories about like Muslim teen fiction or romance or a lot of, you know, African-American storytelling or Latino fiction. Like those are all areas that are flourishing on Wattpad that are very underrepresented in the traditional industry.
Yeah, and I think that's fantastic. And that, like the Mexican thing is really interesting because obviously, you know, Amazon's just one of the stores, but Amazon went into Mexico quite soon, as in they've had a .com.mx store for a while. So clearly Mexico is a market that the booksellers are interested in as well. So it's fascinating that Spanish is becoming such a big market. And also for those authors who have books in Spanish, it's incredibly hard to market books in Spanish right now. So do you think Wattpad can be used as a marketing platform by authors? Like, and how would you recommend people do that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that when we've done polls of our own user base, they are buying books at a higher average than your average consumer out there. And I think that one of the best ways to catch the attention of users on Wattpad is with a story. I don't think it necessarily always needs to be the same story that you're trying to sell, but there are, of course, lots of people that do that too. But writing stories for that audience and building a fan base that is then going to wonder, wow, what else do you have, and go on to purchase them. We have a lot of Wattpad writers that use Wattpad in that way. I think the one thing that I would help steer people towards, though, is understanding that audience and where they're from, especially an international audience. How are the links that you're sharing, links that they're able to access, knowing that this audience is on a mobile device, where are you steering them to and which retailers? Because particularly when you're on iOS, it can be very difficult to buy anywhere else. So how are you considering that when you're sharing your links with your audience?
That's a good point, actually. So what, because I've published on Wattpad before, or put my stuff on Wattpad, I should say. And there's a link, isn't there, to a book that you can put next to it. So are you suggesting that people use a link directly to the author website as opposed to a retailer, for example?
I think it depends on the goal at the right time. Like for us at Wattpad, when we're advertising projects on Wattpad, there's a lot of information that we have as well that I think is harder to tell as a user, but I can see what device someone's on and make sure that if someone's coming to us from an iPhone, they're only going to see ads that target the iBook store because it's a much more seamless process. It lets them, you know, go immediately back and forth within it. And, you know, they don't need a credit card. They can use their app store accounts to make those purchases. So all of those things that help reduce friction help increase sales. Sending someone to an author website is the right way to go, but sometimes it can be bad as well. If it means that they've got to do five more clicks, you know, those are different places that you can lose your audience. I think above all, I would really say experiment with what's working for you. Like, what is the time that you're sending out links? Are you sending country-specific links to people at different times to let different audiences be aware that they are being heard? Because so often I see people post things and it's just a link for a book that's only for sale in the US. And that's fine, but you're alienating the rest of the audience that's reading it. So how can you help make them feel included? And sometimes just giving them a link that's targeted for them of like, look, I looked up the Amazon Mexico links and it's available there too, just to help them do less of the work.
Yeah. And when you say send things out, I mean, basically, from what I remember, you can add like comments on the bottom of your chapters, can't you? And that goes out to people who follow you as an author.
Yeah, you can add comments to the bottom of your page. You can send out broadcast messages to users that are following you. So like other social networks, when I log on to my Wattpad homepage, I see what's going on in my network. I see what people have posted, what they're commenting on, but also what, you know, you can just send out a broadcast message that lets you share any type of detail or links that you want to use as well.
Fantastic. So how... like, because I think everyone's like, okay, getting it a little bit, but how do authors who have books actually make money on Wattpad? Or is it like a social media site where you don't make money on the site, you have to send people elsewhere?
I think there's a few different ways that it can work. I think probably the way that it works for most, like you say, is that you make money on Wattpad in the same way that you make money by investing time in your Twitter profile or investing time in other types of social media. You build your audience, you build your fan base, and you're able to sell them different things in different ways. I think since we last spoke, there's also a lot of new ways that people are making money on Wattpad. So we have launched something called Wattpad Futures. It's not open to all users. It's really targeted at, you know, the top 5% of writers on the platform. Mm-hmm. And it lets them make money by people who are reading their stories. We have new premium ads that go into those stories that every time someone watches it, similar to YouTube's model for their creators, that they are getting paid for that usage. There are some authors that are making, you know, like upwards of 10,000 in a certain, like within a quarter, just based on that reading time.
Wow, that's really awesome. And I like that model too. I mean, I have a YouTube channel, but I make maybe $50 a month. So it's not exactly a serious channel for me. And I can see that, you know, YouTube invests in the big name, you know, YouTubers, and you would invest in the big name kind of Wattpadders who spend time there. So that's obviously very clear. So if an author wants to build a bigger platform on Wattpad, how do you suggest that they do that? Is it a case of just posting regularly or interacting, or how do they do that?
I think both posting regularly, interacting are really important things. I think one of the first things as well, though, is just to learn how the community works in general. If you're just starting a Wattpad profile today, don't join and immediately just start posting. Follow other people. Follow some of the more popular writers, even if you don't necessarily like that story. Watch how they engage with their audience. Watch how regularly they post, which features they use. I think that's all really important things to understand. Join different hashtag groups. We have a club section where you can talk to people within similar genres. I say that's all part of building a strong base that helps your story be seen when you start posting it.
Okay. So, and how often should they be posting? So say they have a book that they're going to put up. Should it be like a chapter a day, or how would they do that?
Yeah. Sometimes, again, it's hard to say that there's one right answer, because sometimes it's different for different stories. I would watch your users. Like, the great thing about Wattpad is that we give our authors a tremendous amount of data. You can see chapter by chapter how many people are reading, how those people are reading through. If you're posting every day, you might notice that a lot of people are reading the first chapter, but when I post the new chapter, people haven't finished yet. When I post chapter four, if half my audience hasn't finished chapter three yet, I'm not going to see a high, you know, click-through rate on the fourth chapter. So I would time it out that way, because people have different length chapters all the time. Some people will chunk chapters even shorter for posting on Wattpad. You know, try to end it at a natural cliffhanger. I think that's a great way to have someone coming back for the next chapter. But there are some authors that I've seen the audience is so desperate for updates that they're able to successfully post every day, and they have no issues with people following along. Some stories they post, you know, once or twice a week. I would say do what works for you and what you're seeing your audience to respond to, but be consistent and let your audience know what to expect. That's one of the most important things.
Yeah, I mean, certainly like with this podcast, when I moved from sporadically posting episodes to every Monday morning UK time, the audience went up and the, you know, the listens went up, because it becomes more of a habit. So it's probably the same. Like, if you're going to do it once a week, do it at the same time. Would that be right?
Absolutely. Yeah, do it like a TV show. Like, not only picking the day, but, you know, I'm going to post at 5 p.m. every Monday, and people begin to expect that. And I think that not only makes people more likely to tune in, but also more likely to comment and to engage with it, because they're all experiencing it at the same time in real time.
Yeah. And is there a scheduling tool for chapters?
There isn't. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And I can imagine there being something like that in the future. I think that that is something that would definitely be more useful to someone who has written a work already and bringing it to Wattpad. And I think most of our users today are writing it as they go, but we're always looking for ways to make the experience as great as we can and as easy for as many different writers as possible.
Yeah, I love scheduling, because, you know, you'd love to be always be ready at the same time every week, but often we're not.
Absolutely.
So that's cool. Okay, so talking about mobile, actually, one question on the mobile and the demographics. So like you mentioned iPhone, but, you know, maybe this is wrong, but I would expect that a lot of people from Mexico might not be surfing on iPhones, for example. So do you see different...
Yeah, I think that when we look at it country by country, we definitely see a drastic difference of where our audience is coming from. We see a higher percentage of people in the US with iPhones. You know, Android definitely dominates in other countries, particularly Southeast Asia. We see a lot more of our audience coming from there. We try to keep our experience as consistent as possible across both apps, but I think like it's definitely important to consider your readers and what type of devices they might be using to access certain things, especially when you're sending them off the app. Because that's where it's a different experience, right? Even things that seem so small, like, I don't know if you know that emojis look different on an Android than on an iPhone. They have their entirely different emoji art. And a lot of people on Wattpad will use emojis in their stories. But something like, I don't know, the cookie emoji looks like a cracker on Android and can confuse people. So there's little things like that you lose that type of, you know, resonance by that type of change that it would experience.
Wow, I did not know that. I assumed that the whole language of emoji was the same, like by definition, because it was an image.
No, because everyone has their own art for it. So iOS has their own images that they've had drawn and they don't share them with other people. It's how they all choose to interpret it. Maybe one day we'll have one consistent
emoji language. Oh, I love this because I actually think that that language question and things like the, you know, like my mum started using emojis, you know, she's finally got into text messaging and she suddenly started using emojis. And I'm like, whoa, that means it's gone mainstream, you know, when my mom's doing it. But that's really, I think it's interesting that people are using them in the stories because that just makes it more real. And that authenticity, I think, is what Wattpad is all about. And maybe yeah. Is like a bit like YouTube, it's being too polished, putting yourself like trying to put yourself above the crowd as such. And does that then just backfire a bit because people are more used to this more natural communication?
I wouldn't necessarily say that being too polished will put people off. Like, people love a good story. And I don't think that you need to change who you are or what your story is to try to reach that. But I think being accessible and being natural is something that people really respond to across all social media. So I think there are almost ways that you can separate your story from how you're interacting as an author. Mm. And I think those are kind of, they definitely play in together. And a lot of Wattpad stories, if you read them, they even have almost like diary entries or author's notes in between the chapters of the story. And I think that's also another great way to kind of engage your audience. Or we've even seen authors start to play with that as a method of fiction. One of my favorite stories on Wattpad right now is a story called Dead in Bed. And the author created a Wattpad profile for the Wattpad author who was fake that started to interact with the actual story itself. So it was like a story within a story where he used the profile to build this extra layer of this young Wattpad author going through a tough time, part of the story.
Well, I remember when the first people, you know, when the first characters started tweeting on Twitter, I remember that. I was like, yeah. So it's interesting how that type of thing emerges in the platform. So, though you have this, so you have a whole load of different partnerships and cool stuff. So you have Tap, which is a chat style reading app. So can you explain what that is for those who might not be familiar, and also the, sort of your thoughts on very short form content?
Yes. So Tap has been a really exciting project for us at Wattpad. I think it's something very natural that makes sense when we see that, you know, 90% of our traffic on Wattpad is coming from mobile phones. And when we look at even stories that are popular on Wattpad, the main app, we were seeing people write a lot of stories in text messages. Mm-hmm. There would be entire stories that would, you know, be very popular with titles like Texting Justin Bieber, and the whole thing would just be stories back and forth. And so we launched Tap back in February, and it's like a voyeuristic type of storytelling, almost as though you're watching two people text. If you're the author, you write your story in text messages, and you can choose even to add different timing things. We let people add those, you know, three dots that you see that make it seem like someone on the other side is typing. You can change the background. You can add sound effects. We've been launching new features to allow other ways of interactively engaging in the story, like being able to accept a video call, a video clip of one of the characters in the story, or other things like that. So it's been really exciting to see it play out. I think the team's doing a fantastic job of adding new features all the time and keeping it really exciting for the users. And it's definitely grown extremely quickly. It really resonates with the younger audience, and we're all going to keep watching, you know, what happens next for that as well.
And when you say younger, you know, what age demographic are into Tap?
Yeah, you know, I don't have the exact demographics for Tap at hand right now. It does skew a little bit younger than traditional Wattpad, but there's also a lot of people who are older that are interested in it as well. I know for myself, I've seen lots of entertaining stories on it. And when you see the people that are writing articles about it or joining to write stories themselves, it's a really easy way to write stories. We see a lot more people want to write stories on Tap because they text all the time. It's very easy for them to write in that format rather than in, you know, long paragraphs and prose.
No, I think it's really fascinating. I mean, I had a look at the site. It's not something that I would do myself, but it's like I can see the attraction for people who really are, you know, doing that all the time. I think it's really fascinating. So you also have a partnership with Universal Cable Productions and started Wattpad Studios to move content into film and TV. Now, of course, many authors dream of the TV and film deal. So how's that working out? And why is Wattpad doing studios, and how can authors get involved?
Yes, absolutely. So Wattpad Studios was launched in 2016 now, and it kind of was the development of a lot of other projects that we had going on. We already had a successful TV show in the Philippines with TV5 called Wattpad Presents. We've been doing lots of publishing of Wattpad stories and helping them get book deals or self-publishing, and had seen 3 New York Times bestsellers come off of Wattpad. And we were seeing many more really talented writers emerge. And so Wattpad Studios was created to kind of address 3 different areas, like to address the film and TV side of, you know, how can we help film studios take advantage of all of the amazing content on Wattpad and help these authors get access to this world. Because for us, the level of data that we're able to see on these stories, we can bring a film studio a project that already has a built-in audience in the demographic they're trying to reach. And when you look at, like, there have been countless articles written about Hollywood's franchise issues of, you know, do something new. No one wants another Transformers movie, or, you know, stop giving us sequels, or stop just remaking other things, which isn't to say those can't be great as well, but there really is a dearth of these original ideas. And part of it is because of that fear of, like, well, we want to do a sequel because the first one did well. We know this one will have a certain audience, or, you know, this one was so great 20 years ago. Let's remake it for the new generation. And I think that often feels like a safer bet. So when we're able to say, yes, this is an original story that hasn't been filmed, but it has an audience of 3 million people under the between the ages of 18 and 30 in the country that you're strong in. That's very appealing for a lot of the studios that we work with. And we're able to give them data that no one else has on how stories are doing month over month, which trends we're seeing rise on a macro level as well to maybe help guide their decisions. So, you know, it's a very in-depth partnership where we're sharing a lot of the data that we see to UCP to help them make better decisions about which stories on Wattpad they want to be optioning. And we're doing that in partnership with them.
Carry on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, the other part, using similar data and insights, we're doing similar projects in the publishing world of helping publishers pick titles that are going to be, that we see as on the rise or that have a strong audience. Or for me, one of my favorite indicators of what's going to be a very successful story is that people can't put it down. It's like, okay, this story on Wattpad, if I know the average session length in a story is something like 10 minutes, and I see stories that people are spending upwards of 40 minutes an average session in, it might have a smaller audience on Wattpad, but it's like everyone who sees it loves it. Let's go out and promote it to more people. You know, we have levers we can pull to give things more promotion and have them be seen more. And then to be able to take that data and analytics to a publisher to say, look at how many people love this. It's a data layer on stories that they don't get from agented manuscripts that they're seeing.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of incredible. And so you like you mentioned these partnerships with publishers. I saw that you have Hachette for audiobooks, but you've also just announced some other things.
Yeah. So we have a great partnership with Hachette for audiobooks. Our audience, like the rest of the whole reading industry, has seen a huge boom in audiobooks. Again, with our users being young and mobile, we're seeing them be wanting to listen to their stories on the go from their phones. And, you know, we're thrilled with what we've been doing so far. We've got a few of them out in market. And Hachette Audiobooks, who also won Audiobook Publisher of the Year, has been fantastic about looking to us for data and engaging in users and finding new ways to promote to our user base. That's one of the projects that we've launched recently, but we've also been busy with other partnerships for publishers. In France, where we're also very strong, we've just announced a partnership with Hachette France, where they're making a commitment to bring more Wattpad authors to be published. And we're sharing a lot of those data and insights with them as well. And also we're doing a similar thing with HarperCollins for teen fiction here in North America and in English worldwide, because, you know, they are so fantastic with their own, you know, insights and teen audience. And, you know, that's also where we're very strong as well. So we're really excited to see what happens in that in the next year, and also who the authors are going to be that are going to participate in that, because all of our teams are busy reading and looking at data now.
Yeah, which is, it's so fascinating because, of course, you know, there was a book, I can't remember the name of it now. It was like Data and Publishing or whatever, or Building a Bestseller or something like that, you know, about how you could use data to find the next bestsellers. But that's actually what you're doing with Wattpad, is you're using data to find evidence of stories that are selling that you can then present to people who can get that content out further. That's about right.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that what's different, you're right. There have been other like cracking the code of bestseller.
Yeah, that
like
one. That. Yeah.
And part of what I think where we differ philosophically from how they've approached the problem is they're looking to analyze the data in the text itself of like people that have plot, you know, read the rises here and falls here and use this type of language, they'll be the bestseller. But I don't think that people want the same thing, particularly trend wise over time. It's like, it's easy to look backwards and say, this is why this was successful. But then something isn't going to be a bestseller until it is, right? No one buys books in a certain genre until it's the next biggest thing. So I don't think looking at the text itself is the right way to give you the answer. I think it's looking at the audience reactions, which is more what we do. We look to see what people are reading, what covers they're clicking on, how long they're reading, because audience tastes change. Mm-hmm. Culture changes so fast. So rather than analyze the text, we're analyzing the reactions to them.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And I found this quote from May 2017, Wattpad CEO stated that Wattpad is well on its way to becoming a machine learning first entertainment company, focusing on emerging products, machine learning, data science, and all these other things. Now, I'm personally excited about machine learning and AI and all this discoverability, particularly in this ever-growing sea of content, which Wattpad has an ever-growing sea of content like everywhere else. So what are your thoughts like looking forward? So we spoke 4 years ago, 3 years ago, and things have changed. So looking forwards over the next couple of years, you know, what are your ideas? It doesn't even have to be official, just, you know, Ashley's thoughts on the, you know, what's going to happen next with machine learning and AI and all that.
I think machine learning is going to be touching almost every part of our business, of how we work. And it already is. Like when we look at the ways that we're serving up recommendations for stories we think that you'd like that, we're looking at similar audiences and connections and all of that. I think that where I look at how it's going to help me do my job, I think being able to spot trends earlier, being able to spot things on the rise, spotting authors on the rise. Like, I hope that we'll get to a point that as soon as a chapter is posted on Wattpad, we know what is likely to happen. Of course, you know, watching how audiences respond to it will continue to be something that's so important. But I think finding things out sooner is something that we're really going to see change and develop.
Mm. And do you see, for example, VR or AR, augmented reality, virtual reality, given the mobile situation, do you see that Wattpad moving into the VR kind of AR space?
Absolutely. I think, you know, anytime there's that type of transformative technology, the first question we're going to be asking ourselves is, how does this interact with pushing forward what we think of as storytelling? And I think you'll see Wattpad launching more apps like Tap of how do we engage in different things in different ways. We have teams focused on those emerging products. We've also just launched Wattpad Labs to allow entrepreneurs with different ideas of what they would like to do at Wattpad with Wattpad's resources and teams and technology being given, you know, time and space and a job to be able to do that on a trial basis. So we're really looking forward to seeing, I think that was announced about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago from now. So those are types of things that are going to be changing what storytelling looks like in, you know, 5 to 10 years from now.
That's so cool. And I got to point out as well that, you know, there's been this discussion of the publishing startups that have mostly failed. And Wattpad is the startup that's been, you know, kind of held up as the poster child of the thing that worked. But what's interesting is it sounds like it's more like a venture capital model now, where it's like, okay, let's try these different things. And if they work, we'll double down on them. And if they don't, we'll change. And so this technology and, you know, pivoting idea, is that the reason Wattpad is continuing to grow and thrive while other startups, you know, fall by the wayside?
You know, I think that it's also because it was never approached as a publishing startup. I think in a lot of ways that's almost accidental, or what it's almost fallen into. It's not It was never part of the vision. It was never built to solve a problem the publishing industry had. It was trying to solve the problem that writers have. And how do you, like, what are different ways that people want to express themselves? I think one of the biggest differentiators, which is funny because it's such a small, elegant shift, but when people have been able to write on the internet for a long time, there are lots of blogging platforms. There's no shortage of places to do that. But everything's in reverse chronological order, from Twitter to everything else, or algorithmic feeds. And you see what's newest first. And I think what one of the really elegant things that Wattpad did that really allows it to best serve fiction narrative storytelling is being able to create a narrative in chronological order. So when you post a story on Wattpad, you're saying, similarly, this post is the first chapter. And anyone that then experiences that story, it starts them at the first chapter. You all get notified when there is a new chapter, but it lets you experience it as it was written in the way it was meant to be written. And there was no one else that was doing that anywhere on the internet. So not only, it wasn't designed just for fiction. You know, we see a lot of other narrative nonfiction type stories. And I think we'll continue to see a lot more of that, and a lot of other new genres start to emerge, and things that are being ignored by the publishing industry flourish on Wattpad.
Mm, fantastic. So where can people find you and Wattpad online?
So all of my handles are the same. I'm Ashley Gardner on Twitter, on Wattpad. I'm happy to answer any questions that people have. I know I still get tweets and questions from the last interview we did 3 years ago. So I'm really excited that we're going to have an updated one here. And I think it's Wattpad.com, and you know, the hashtag is Wattpad on Instagram and Twitter and other social media. And we'd love to see more writers experiment and hear from them of what they want Wattpad to be.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Ashley. That was great.
Thanks so much.
So I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Ashley about Wattpad. Super interesting stuff. And I hope some of you will be checking Wattpad out for your books. And next week, I'm talking about writing Christian fiction and success over a long career with Jerry B. Jenkins, who co-wrote the Left Behind series, which certainly made an impression on me as a younger person, along with Frank Peretti's books, both of which are probably responsible for the various demons that appear in my fiction, and why I use Christian mythology, history, faith in my writing. So I was quite thrilled to talk to Jerry B. Jenkins. And but we're also, even if you're not in the Christian fiction market, and of course I'm not writing in the Christian fiction market, fascinating chat about long-term career. And, you know, what it takes to be writing that long. And just a reminder, if you'd like to help with the Healthy Writer book, please go to thecreativepen.com/health and fill in the questionnaire. Okay, happy writing week, and see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.